A weary Chief Justice, questions about the finances of Supreme Court justices, and the court's rightward tilt. Beyond some landmark decisions, these themes mark the recently concluded Supreme Court term. For insight, we turn now to NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg and Vikram Amar, a UC Davis professor of law and the former dean of the University of Illinois College of Law. Welcome to you both.
Hi there, Scott.
Hello.
So, Nina, the big question going into June was, is Chief Justice Roberts still in control of the court? And to my non-expert point of view, it seemed to me that there were some mixed messages in the answer. What was your take?
Oh, he's back in control of the court. Last term, every observer said, you know, he's lost control of the conservative supermajority. They have five votes without him. They don't need him. They overturned Roe versus Wade. He didn't join them. And he assigned Justice Clarence Thomas the opinion in a gun case, and it was an incredibly broad outcome. My surmise was that the chief, having assigned the opinion, felt he couldn't very well dissent from it. Mm-hmm. But now they're stuck having to tell the rest of the world what they meant because it was so broad. So this year, the chief, maybe having learned his lesson, wrote four of the seven most important decisions. And the result is that the court still is more conservative than any court in generations, but it looks less like a rogue court. It invalidated affirmative action in higher education, but dodged the race question in upholding the rest of the Indian Child Welfare Act case. It threw out the Biden student loan program, but allowed the president to set immigration priorities. It gutted a lot of the Clean Water Act, but upheld the last important part still standing of the Voting Rights Act. And by the way, I don't for a moment think getting to yes on any of these was easy, and it's the reason that we had more of a train wreck at the end of the court term than usual. Even more, I should say.
But in the end, big majorities doing sweeping things when Roberts wanted them, but still sticking to those middle lanes or those incremental cases that he seems to prefer and wasn't getting last term when he wanted them.
Correct.
Vikram, what were your big takeaways from the term?
I certainly agree that the term reflects Chief Justice Roberts' leadership. And Chief Justice Roberts is very much of an incrementalist and an institutionalist. So there were big cases this year, to be sure. The affirmative action cases were big. The so-called independent state legislature case, where they repudiated a very conservative theory by Republican legislators in North Carolina, was very big. So I think this term is not as much of a blockbuster term as last year, but no doubt a conservative court that is moving in conservative directions, even as it rejects conservative arguments like ISL, the independent state legislature theory, that make no sense.
What about the affirmative action ruling, though? You said you didn't see any big sweeping rulings along the same ways, but this is something that colleges have used for decades to play a role in admissions, and raises so many questions about how race factors into other big decisions beyond colleges.
I've dealt with affirmative action both as a scholar and as an administrator. You're right that the court invalidated what many, many, many universities currently do, which is to take the race of individual applicants into account. But there was a part of the end of Roberts' majority opinion that said something to the effect that universities can still consider how an applicant's discussion of how race affected his or her life into the mix of admissions variables. And so I think 5 years from now, when we look back, universities are going to have been able to work around this very formalistic opinion that says you can't use the race of individuals to admit them, but you can take into account the extent to which they have overcome racial challenges. It's going to push the burden on universities to be more individualistic in their assessment of each candidate. But at the end of the day, universities will find a way to remain diverse by crediting individuals who have overcome racism in their personal lives.
Nina, I want to ask you about another major decision, joined by Roberts, written by Justice Neil Gorsuch, that carved out for the first time a major exception to public accommodation laws. This is the latest case addressing gay rights and same-sex marriage.
Vic and I have a slight difference about this. You know, through thick and thin, the court for the last 60 years has said that when a business holds itself out to the public, it has to accommodate all comers under public accommodations laws. But now it's said, in a case involving a wedding website designer, that she doesn't have to serve same-sex couples because the message she would be creating would violate her religious beliefs. I think that's a very big deal. Vic has a somewhat different opinion.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal, but I think it doesn't come out of nowhere. It's true that this is the first case in which a business has been exempt from an anti-discrimination law in this setting. But in two cases in the 90s involving the Boy Scouts and the organizers of the Boston St. Patrick's Day Parade, the public accommodation law, the anti-discrimination law in those cases, gave way to a First Amendment claim that those two organizations did not want to include gays because it compromised the message that they sent. This year's decision from Colorado is significant, but I do think it's going to be limited to those who provide goods and services to the consumers that are custom tailored. They're not off the shelf, ready-made products or services. So McDonald's can't say it doesn't want to sell hamburgers to gays or lesbians or gay and lesbian couples or blacks or women because there's nothing expressive about making and selling a hamburger. This particular challenger in Colorado argued that she wasn't providing kind of off the shelf website design services. She was working with each client to craft a message for the wedding that reflected her expression as well as the happy couple's expression.
Roberts is back in the driver's seat. As we're discussing here, many of these cases leave a lot of secondary and follow-up legal questions that I can expect many people will try to get in front of the court going forward. Nina, any sense of what the next term will be like? Because we've now had two terms in a row with enormous questions of consequence before this court.
Well, the court washed out a case with the help of the Democrats in Congress who had asked, who'd been pressing the idea that they, a minority on a committee, could demand documents from the Trump administration. Now, they didn't have the support of then-Speaker Nancy Pelosi when they went to the Supreme Court. And interestingly, they finally pulled out of the case. The court agreed to hear it. The Biden administration was on the Trump side. And for want of a better expression, the rogue Democrats pulled the case. So that's not going to be before the court. There are a couple of very big regulatory issues. But so far, at least, the court has passed up on a lot of red meat issues and may be saying to itself, could we please have a breather here?
One thing to keep an eye on, of course, is whether any of the cases in which former President Trump is embroiled make their way to the Supreme Court, or if President Trump tries to get them in front of the Supreme Court. I think the court's rejection of a Trump-supported theory in that independent state legislature case, Moore versus Harper from North Carolina, I think that bodes well for the court's sense in this area and its unwillingness to get dragged down the Trump rabbit hole.
That is Vikram Amar, a UC Davis professor of law and the former dean of the University of Illinois College of Law. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you much.
And we're also joined by NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg. Thanks, Nina.
Always a pleasure, Scott.